You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
The headlines are killing me. This may be the worst Trump scandal yet, Washington Post. Impeachment becoming more and more likely, Politico. Primary challenger and former GOP Governor William Weld accuses Trump of committing treason, quote, pure and simple, The Hill. Nancy Pelosi remains against impeachment despite reports, Vox, of treason, despite reports of treason. And then there are the still depressing, if not entirely Trump-related, but Trump will find a way to make it worse headlines, like birds vanishing from North America, nearly 3 billion birds lost in last 50 years, CBS News. Still, not all the headlines are terrible. Warren leads in new Iowa poll, New York Times. That's good. I like that. You go, Elizabeth. And there were a lot of headlines like this over the weekend. Children worldwide unite in global climate strike, CNN. That was good. That was really, really good. The news about the climate strike and images from it were truly inspiring. But not quite restore your faith in humanity inspiring. As Greta Thunberg herself pointed out in her speech at the United Nations on Monday, yesterday, the very need for the climate strike is a bad sign, an indictment of world leaders and our political and economic systems. It's inspiring to see children marching all over the world, but it is depressing to think that they need to. It's a headline that, when you really start to think about it, makes you worry for humanity, doesn't restore your faith in humanity. But if you follow the news closely, like I do, there's always a headline that restores your faith in humanity, and I found mine in USA Today. Florida couple had sex in the back of a police car after arrests. Okay, there's nothing funny or faith in humanity restoring about drunk driving. Drunk drivers kill people, and never the right ones. But Megan Mundanaro and Seth Thomas weren't driving drunk at the time of their arrests. They were biking drunk. They were on bicycles, not motorcycles. So not technically a DUI, more of a BUI or a CUI, biking under the influence, cycling under the influence. So this Florida couple, and of course they're a Florida couple, this environmentally conscious Florida couple doing their part to cut greenhouse gas emissions by biking, they were really only a danger to themselves at the time the police spotted them biking erratically. They were, in fact, nearly hit by a car. So the cops pulled them over, smelled booze on them, placed them under arrest, put them in the back of a squad car, and when the cops were distracted impounding their bicycles, Megan and Seth seized the moment. Before the cops could react, Megan and Seth, in the back of that cop car, were naked and at it. All right, I love this story, and it was a tonic for two reasons. First, bragging rights. Megan and Seth will win place or show in every craziest place you've ever done it contest for the rest of their lives. Craziest place we've ever done it? Back of a squad car, under arrest. Top that, motherfucker. And second, well, I love this story because I love the resilience of the human libido. However bad it gets, even at the worst moments of our lives, even when we're sitting in the back of a squad car under arrest for BUI, desire finds a way. Sex finds a way. Desire and sex and a willing partner in crime have the power to make our day brighter. And if you and your partner in crime make headlines, it has the power to brighten the day of a depressed news junkie sex advice podcaster on the other side of the country. So thank you, Megan and Seth, for the epic reach around. It was just what I needed. Oh, and Nancy, if you're listening, impeach the motherfucker already. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. The show is twice as long for subscribers, and there are no ads. Michael Seligman of Mob Queens, a fascinating new podcast about an unexamined chapter in queer history, joins us to talk about the show. All right, speaking of shows, Savage Love Live is coming to Chicago, Madison, and Minneapolis this week, Thursday at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, Friday at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Wisconsin, and Saturday night in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the Pantages Theater. Stormy Daniels will be joining me in Minneapolis. Go to savagelovecast.com/events for more info and to get tickets, and now your calls. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit and free two-day shipping, go to getroman.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Everlane, luxury basic clothing and accessories made at ethical factories without those retail markups. For free shipping and to support the Lovecast, go to everlane.com/savage. Dame Products is a woman-founded company making toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people with vulvas, they're engineered to bring your solo and coupled play to new heights. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see how they're making the world a better place, one vulva at a time.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old male, married for 5 years to a wife that is 31. We have two kids, the younger being 1.5 and the older being 4. Me and my wife disagree on several minor things, but our only major issue is we have around 2 or 3 arguments a year that can turn into yelling matches, where we say some pretty mean shit with or without the kids in earshot, and I hate it. Though our marriage is mostly good, this isn't the whole issue. The truth is I got married very young, after only knowing her for 6 months, thinking it's what I wanted in life. I don't have much free time due to work, and getting almost none to being in this full-time commitment to my family. And being so young, I feel like I'm missing out on many freedoms, not getting to do what I want, when I want, when I am off work. On the other hand, I'm capable of being a good husband and a great dad, and honestly, my marriage isn't that bad. It's just not the type of life I want to lead. I know this sounds selfish, but now I know I don't want this type of commitment, and I don't think I ever will. And this isn't some drive to be young and dumb. I still love my kids and want to be in their life. I just don't like the principle of marriage. It's like we're each other's legal property, and I don't want that control over someone or someone to have that control over me. I feel like I'm just waiting on the next big fight to say enough is enough. I've had this feeling for a while now, and I'm tired of being on the fence. Should I just man the fuck up and endure my commitment, or should I follow my heart and work towards a divorce? I have a great relationship with my mother and father, and I feel like my kids are young enough now that the separation won't be as painful. But who knows if my marriage will stand the test of time with my feelings. Dan, what should I do?
When there are young kids involved, I typically err on the side of staying together. But that's in the context of low-stress, low-conflict relationships where there is affection and there's a good partnership and the people enjoy each other and they enjoy parenting together and are able to acknowledge that perhaps the other things that they expected would be a part of the marriage, a strong romantic connection, affection, intimacy, sex, aren't there. But otherwise, if you can grieve those things and get past them and you can adjust your expectations so you're not always furiously angry that you aren't getting what you expected out of your marriage, that can work. And I sometimes encourage people in that circumstance to stay together. But if you're having knockdown, drag-out, blow-up fights 3 or 4 times a year where you say vicious things to your wife and she says vicious things to you in front of your young children, yeah, that's a high-conflict, high-stress relationship and probably one that needs to end. And if you know your own mind, and it sounds like you know your own mind, and it sounds like what you want, what you know yourself to want, is out. So my hunch, my informed guess, is that over time there will be more fights like this because consciously and subconsciously you want the fuck out of this relationship. And consciously or subconsciously, you're going to do everything in your power. And consciously or subconsciously, she knows it. She may want out too. And you or the both of you are going to sabotage the relationship and sabotage each other and have more and more of these fights in front of your children, which is going to harm them over time, do emotional damage to them over time, perhaps more emotional damage than will be inflicted on them by mom and dad working it the fuck out and divorcing and trying to have as amicable a partnership after the divorce as they possibly can. So yeah, you married too young. So did your wife. She was only 26 when you married. That seems pretty fucking young too. You were both young and dumb. You're grateful for those kids. You say you love your kids. I assume she loves those kids. Something good came out of this relationship. So it was good that you guys came together at the time in your life when you did. Otherwise, these two kids that you both adore would not exist. You should be able to come to some terms around that. agree that good came from this, even if you two need to get the fuck away from each other for your sanity and for your kids' sanity.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 24-year-old listener in Chicago, and I am calling because I recently realized that I identify as being on the asexual spectrum. So sex has never really has been super pleasurable for me. I, you know, even oral or, you know, fingering or anything. I'm heterosexual, by the way, so I have sex with men and have had oral and PIV. And I don't really enjoy it. I'm never really in the mood to do it. And I think that if I went the rest of my life without having sex, it would be fine. And I realize I don't experience sexual desire in the way that many other people do, and that's okay. I'm really okay with that. But issue is that I have been dating a guy for the past 2 years now, and he has a fairly high libido, and if it were up to him, we'd probably have sex every night. And I'm worried about telling him about this, because while I wouldn't want, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be celibate with him, I would continue to have sex with him out of love and out of wanting to do something for him. I think it would hurt him if he found out that I don't experience sexual desire or sexual attraction really to anyone. And I think he would feel really hurt by that. So part of me thinks I should just never tell him and continue on, you know, the way we've been having sex, which is not great for me, but, you know, great for him. And if basically all sex is going to be just not that great for me, then why don't I just keep on doing it and not really tell him about this? But I also don't want to lie to him, because that's not a good foundation for a relationship. So just wanted to see if you had any advice about how to tell a partner that you identify as asexual, and, you know, ways you can let it know, let your partner know that you still love them and assure them that it's not their fault.
Luckily for you, you're heterosexual. You could find a guy who didn't give a shit about whether or not you enjoyed sex or particularly wanted to have sex. There are, because I hear from their partners, lots of straight guys out there who treat their female partners like their fleshlights and aren't particularly invested in their pleasure or cognizant of a woman's ability to experience pleasure, and they just essentially jack off inside their female partners. You could find one of those guys. Those guys don't just make terrible sex partners. Those guys often make terrible partner partners. They're often terrible partners in every other partnery respect. So you might not want to settle for one of those guys. You might want to try to land a guy like the guy you've got, the guy who is interested in your pleasure, a guy who is interested in not just his desires, but in the desires of his partner. You know, for a lot of people, for good and decent people, for the kind of people most of us want to wind up in bed with, we don't just want to want them. We want them to want us too. Reactive desire is something a lot of people talk about. A lot of women experience reactive desire, where what turns them on is to be desired by their partner, to be wanted. Well, a lot of men feel that way too. A lot of men want to be wanted, just like a lot of women want to be wanted. I don't think as many men have reactive desire, but it's not fun to have sex with somebody who could give a shit. It's not fun for most men, thank God, straight and gay, to have sex with someone and treat them like a fleshlight. Good people, people who are good at sex, people who are good at sexual intimacy, want to please their partner. They want to be pleased themselves. They want to take pleasure from, but they also want to give pleasure too. And they want the experience. They want sex to be mutually pleasurable, mutually desired. And as that is the case with most people who are sexual, I do think you have an obligation to disclose that you are asexual and that you do not experience sexual desire, that you are willing to have sex to please someone else. But I don't think that you should have sex. I don't think that you should go through the motions to land someone else, because the sex that you are having now, 2 years into this relationship, the sex that you are enduring, these acts that are not pleasurable for you at all, but are tolerable, it's highly likely that over time, what you're doing right now, the sex that you're having, the motions that you're going through, will become intolerable. And I think that your partner has a right to that information and has a right to make an informed choice about whether they want to be with you or not, or whether you guys are sexually compatible. And the only way to determine if
you are sexually compatible with someone else is for that person to be honest with you about who they are sexually and for you to be honest with them about who you are sexually. There are lots of different ways to structure, organize a relationship. There are people out there who are asexual, who have committed long-term romantic relationships. They want committed long-term romantic relationships. Some of them are with other asexuals. Some of them are with sexuals. With sexual people who understand their partners are asexual, who understand that their partners are doing this for them and not deriving any pleasure from the act themselves, and are not treating their partners like fleshlights, but they are doing for each other in that moment. They're allowing their partner to do for them, and they're respectful, and it is pleasurable to the extent that it's pleasurable. Perhaps the asexual partner derives some pleasure from giving pleasure, but no pleasure from the sex act itself. And then there are people who are sexual with asexual partners where they don't have sex inside the relationship, but the sexual person is allowed to have sex outside the relationship with other partners, perhaps with randos, so there's no threat to the emotional primacy of the relationship between the sexual and the asexual partner in the committed relationship. Perhaps they have concurrent romantic relationships. I've met people in polyland at poly events where there is a committed couple or triad that involves one asexual person and the other person, or the non-asexual people in that relationship, have committed concurrent romantic relationships that are sexual with others. And it's those relationships, the committed concurrent romantic or sexual relationships with others, that make it possible for the sexual person to be in the committed long-term romantic companionate-ish relationship with their sexual partner, or pardon me, with their asexual partner. So just telling him the truth, and I think he deserves the truth, doesn't mean you can't be with him over the long term. You're going to have to work something out. You're going to have to figure out what the accommodations are, whether the accommodations you're making him to go through the motions, or the accommodations you make for him that allow him to seek sex with partners who desire him in a way that you can't and will never, because he needs that too, in addition to the intimacy that he enjoys and benefits from in the relationship he has with you. But you got to be honest. You got to tell him who you are. You're not going to want to be telling him that you're asexual 15 years and two kids into this relationship when the sex that you are having with him in 15 years has gone from tolerable at 2 years to intolerable and you are just done at 15. That is the wrong time to tell someone that, oh, guess what? Surprise. I knew this all along. I'm asexual. He would be rightly angered to be told that at that time. So tell him now. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. Everybody knows that men are not to be trusted to take care of their own health. If the schlep and process and hassle of getting your butt to a doctor's office is preventing you from getting medication to treat erectile dysfunction, you should consider Roman. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Maybe it's embarrassment. Maybe you don't want to talk about your boners with your doctor. But here's the thing. ED medications work and they help, and you should access them if you need them. Of course, at the Lovecast, we take ED seriously. We talk about it a lot. There's no reason to ignore it. There's no reason to be embarrassed. And thankfully, Roman is here, and they've created an easy way for you to chat with an actual doctor online to get the meds you need. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. And getting started is simple. Go to GetRoman.com/Savage and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, don't suffer in softy silence. Go talk to a doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out, and it can be treated and you can be helped with these medications that Roman can make available to you discreetly and quickly. Because at Get Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/Savage to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. It is also a great way to support the Savage Lovecast. Again, that's GetRoman.com/Savage for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/Savage.
Hey, how's it going, Dan? I'm a 20-something-year-old straight male living in California at the moment. I was over in England for my education, and while I was there, I met this girl at a party and we started hooking up. At the time, I was probably doing Molly like 5-6 days a week, drinking all the time, smoking weed way too heavily. So it kind of really put a damp on, I guess, my perception of things around me. So we hang out a couple of times. I end up hooking up with her again at her house. And after we have sex, she asked me if I noticed her disability. And I'm kind of in a drug-induced stupor. And I said no. And she proceeds to pull out one of her hands, which only has two fingers on it. Now, this isn't a problem. I really didn't care. I honestly didn't notice. But I always thought this was just a kind of a one-night stand thing. So I left and never contacted her. But now that I'm a bit older, I feel like she may feel that the reason I didn't contact her was because of her disability, whenever it was really I was just looking for someone to kind of spend the night with. So I was wondering if it's something that I should maybe reach out, we're still Facebook friends, and say, listen, I apologize, or if it's just, you know, too little too late. And she might have even thought of it the same way I did, you know, but any advice would be great.
I'm having a hard time putting myself in this woman's shoes and trying to figure out what would be worse. Hearing from you and being told that, hey, it wasn't that you only had two fingers on one of your hands that I never saw you again. It was that I wasn't interested in seeing you again. Even if you had 20 fingers on one hand, I wasn't interested in seeing you again. I only wanted a one night thing. And so that's why you didn't hear from me again. It wasn't about your disability. So don't blame your disability. Blame everything else about your personality or your looks, because I wasn't interested in you. Fingers notwithstanding, or lack of three fingers on one hand notwithstanding. So would that be the worst thing, or would it be worse to always be attributing to my fingers or my lack of fingers, to my disability, the disappearance of you and any other guy who only was interested in a one-night stand? You say you're friends on Facebook still, so you still have this connection to this person. How do they seem? How do they come across on Facebook? Are they upfront and out there about their disability? Do they hide it? Does it seem like a shameful secret? I guess not, because she drew your attention to it in a kind of ballsy, confrontational, aggressive way in the moment. So it may not pain her to have a conversation all these years later when you're like, hey, it wasn't your hand, it was you. Or it was me. I was all strung out on drugs and was only interested in temporary connections, and I've kind of felt bad ever since. And are you then asking her for absolution? And is this about making you feel better? Or is it about making her feel better? Because the rejection wasn't about her disability. The rejection was about circumstance and the place you were at in your life. And PSA, the more you know, kids, please don't do Molly 5 or 6 times a week and get drunk all the time on Molly. Please don't mix ecstasy and alcohol. You could die, and too much of a good thing is way too much of a thing. If you find a drug that you really enjoy, you should do it every once in a great while. Otherwise, you're going to ruin that drug for yourself. If you take ecstasy once and you have some sort of transcendent experience, if you take ecstasy 5 or 6 times a week, you're going to end up taking ecstasy just to feel like it's a fucking average Tuesday, and you're going to ruin ecstasy for yourself. If you like ecstasy that one time you did it, you should do ecstasy every few years, not every few hours. The more you know about making ecstasy still good for you all those years later, preserve and protect and defend ecstasy from its more propensity to abuse it. Anyway, that's a long digression. I'm still wrestling with what to tell you, caller, about what to do here. I would leave it alone. I think you should leave it the fuck alone. You haven't heard from her, your Facebook friends. She's never asked. It's never come up. She obviously wasn't so pained by your disappearance that she felt like she had to reach out for an answer. If you get the sense from how she comports herself online that she's really struggling with her disability and how it impacts her relationships, and you worry that she may have become more insecure over time and more shut down because of it, and your perceived rejection, you know, your disappearance, which you may have attributed to her disability, may have fed into that, you might want to then reach out and say, hey, it wasn't that. It was everything else. It was where I was. And it was what I wanted at the time, which was just a one-night thing. And it wasn't a rejection of you based on your disability. And it might help her to hear that. Maybe you could say that. But again, I'm really torn. I'm really struggling. And maybe I should kick this to my listeners out there who have disabilities. If you have a one-night stand with someone and you never hear from them again, are you likely to attribute that kind of rejection to your disability? And it might help you to hear it wasn't tied to your disability. Or is that not a conversation that you need to have or would want to have? So I'm going to take the cop-out route here, and I'm going to kick this to any disabled callers who would like to call in with their POV.
If any of you have ever seen me in the wild, you know that unlike my husband, I am not the most fashionable dude, but I don't look like a slob either. Thank you very much. And that's all thanks to Everlane and my husband, who picks out my clothes for me on Everlane. They make sturdy, simple, good-looking clothes, and all using the finest materials without traditional markups. They want you to know what you're paying for and why, so they tell you their real costs and are radically transparent about every step in their process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. No matter your style or preference, Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. And because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. Essentials, like their Cotton Crew t-shirt, which I'm wearing right now, are exactly what they should be. Versatile, simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. They have a beautiful selection of 100% grade A cashmere. I love their premier Japanese denim. And Nancy especially loves their outerwear made from recycled water bottles, which are perfect for the Pacific Northwest. Check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/savage. Plus, you will get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/savage. Everlane.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. Long-time listener here. I've straight since had part of a... my partner is female. We are happily married. We're having a discussion about our different sexual needs and kind of came across that for her, she needs to have an emotional connection during sex. I also need that, but I also every once in a while need something that is completely devoid of that. And she's been awesome in allowing me to occasionally see masseuses, go to strip clubs, that kind of a thing. We were recently discussing where the boundaries lie in terms of what can happen. Would it be cool if I went to a swingers club or to a glory hole at the swingers club? And we kind of came to certain boundaries, specifically like stopping at oral play. And she also requested that if I'm going to do these things, that I A, wear a condom, which I'm totally cool with, and B, also go on PrEP. And I want to put her mind at ease. And obviously, like, I don't want her to be worried about anything. As a result of my going and doing what I need to do and having fun in this way, my feeling is with PrEP is just that I'm not quite sure if I need to do that, and I'm happy to do it to put her mind at ease. But she did ask me to call and see if, you know, this is an unreasonable request, because my response was kind of like, well, if I'm wearing condoms, like, the odds are more likely that I'll get hit by lightning and die. She also wants me to let you know that one of the reasons she's worried about it is we're considering having kids soon. She wants to make sure that there's as small of a biological risk to our future children as possible.
Are you sleeping with men?
No, I'm not.
Where are the glory holes with women on the other side? I've never heard of that.
You know, typically if you look at like swingers clubs and that kind of thing, you can find them.
Ah.
I live in a pretty large city, so like,
okay, see, you know, these aren't like dirty bookstore public sex environments. This is a swingers club. It's men and women, and sometimes, you know, at that kind of a swingers club, there'll be, you know, a ramp with maybe some walls with some holes cut in it, but the understanding is that it is all opposite sex sexual contact going on in that environment.
Yes. Generally speaking, I'm pretty sure that's how it works. At least that's how the people I've talked to who've been to one are telling me. You know, I've never actually been to one. It's kind of a big fantasy of mine. And it's pretty awesome that she's into potentially letting me explore, you know, that. But yeah, it would, as far as I know, it's a pretty controlled environment. It's not like, you know.
Okay. That's why I called you, because if you as a straight guy knew where the glory holes were with women on the other side, the whole world was going to not know about that. And of course, I should have figured you meant a swingers club where that could go on outside of truck stops and dirty bookstores where women are not on the other side of the holes carved in the walls and the stalls, guys. Trust me. Okay, so going on PrEP does seem excessive. And that's not to stigmatize same-sex sexual contact. It's just that HIV rates are much higher, prevalence of HIV positive people much higher in, you know, communities of men who have sex with men, period. That's just a fact. So if you were a bisexual right. guy and you were having outside sexual contact, even with condoms, particularly if you were one being penetrated, I would side with your wife and encourage you indeed to get on PrEP because the risk would be real. Condoms sometimes break. Some condoms sometimes leak. People who used condoms responsibly every single time before PrEP came along would sometimes get infected yeah. because a condom would leak or break. And that was just an unavoidable risk. And PrEP has, for all intents and purposes, eliminated that risk. But if you're having oral sex and you're having PIV sex and you're wearing a condom, your chances of contracting HIV are nil.
That was kind of my feeling. And look, like I want to do, I mean, she's being super awesome, you know, and very open-minded, and we're kind of expanding the boundaries of our relationship in wonderful ways. And I want to do everything I can to make her comfortable. I do also know that, like, you know, coming up in school, we were given a lot of scare tactics around STIs. And I want to make sure that, like, the decision-making as we approach this is, like, you know, getting rid of all reasonable risks. But, like, you know, to me, it's kind of like, if that's what I was doing and I was wearing a condom, like, contracting any form of STI, really, you know, is kind of like getting hit by a bus and struck by lightning.
I wouldn't say that. You know, yeah. even if you wear a condom, that doesn't provide protection, perfect protection. It provides some limited protection for the skin-to-skin sexually transmitted infections, herpes, HPV, that risk right, isn't right. eliminated. And, you know, condoms sometimes fail. The risks aren't eliminated if you wear a condom for syphilis, gonorrhea, HIV, and the original sexually transmitted infection, pregnancy. Not eliminated, but minimized to a greater right. extent, particularly if you're using a condom correctly and effectively. Everybody, please go to Planned Parenthood. Read what they have to say about using a condom correctly. A lot of people put them on incorrectly. You know, when we talk about condoms leaking, it's because people will ejaculate, men will ejaculate or women will ejaculate if the woman has a penis, and then they will keep thrusting while they're wearing the condom that they've ejaculated into because their partner hasn't climaxed yet and their partner would like them to keep thrusting. And then that will force cum back up through and out of the condom and potentially expose someone to
interesting
to the semen, which could then expose them to HIV, which is how a lot of people right. got infected okay. back in the day, pre-PrEP. But if you are using condoms correctly and you're not doing that sort of thing, you don't have to worry for the most part. You know, the risks aren't 100% eliminated. I shouldn't have used the word nil earlier, but you are protected from syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. And the protection that PrEP would give you in that circumstance, it's really overkill. It's protection for something that you're pretty much not at risk of contracting in that circumstance.
Right.
And so,
yeah.
you know, and PrEP, of course, as I hope everybody knows now, does not protect you from syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, herpes, HPV. PrEP protects you from HIV, period. And there's a lot of people out there who get on PrEP who think, woohoo, I'm safe now and I don't ever have to use a condom again. And that isn't true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I know that. You know, it's just a matter of, I think that's the big one. Because again, just said in the car, we're thinking about having kids. And of course, like if you do contract HIV or something like that, it's really, especially in this day and age with the treatments they have, it's not the end of the, I mean, it's not ideal. It's not something you should shoot for, but it's not the end of the world. Like, you know, it's very treatable. And I think I just saw a thing like potentially becoming curable, which is great.
They've cured two people for all the efforts of the last 40 years. And the process yeah. of the cure is very difficult and protracted. And not easily replicated.
Right.
Anybody who's out there who heard us talking about a cure for HIV, Google it, read the stories.
No.
I'm like, it's a part of the conversation, and you're right. It is a part of the conversation. It's a very hopeful sign. And you know, in science and research, they're diligently working on curing everyone, and fingers crossed, and I'll burst into tears the day that actually happens. We're not quite there yet. It's just that when you talk about mitigating your risks, you want to be rational about mitigating your risks. And,
right.
you know, using condoms religiously and correctly is going to mitigate the risks you're actually running, having opposite sex under the circumstances that you described. And going on PrEP would be overkill, I think. But if that's your wife's requirement, even if it is slightly irrational, if that's what she requires for you to have this permission, you may have to talk to your physician. You may have to do it to assuage her not entirely rational fears. You know, female-to-male transmission of HIV is a thing that has happened. is a thing that could happen.
Right.
It is highly unlikely, particularly if you are using a condom, even for oral sex.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. Okay, cool. Thank you. And that's kind of where I was coming at. Is that like maybe I just might end up doing it just because, again, she's being awesome and I want to make her feel as safe as possible on this. You know, but I thank you for the information that, like, yeah, this is, in terms of risks, there are other risks to worry about long before this. Like, this is probably not a risk. Or very, very, very tiny.
And how often and how impulsive do you plan to be? Like, you going to a big swingers event to get your freak on, is that something you would plan, like, 6 months in advance? Or is that something on, like, a Friday night you would hear about it and head to?
You know, I mean, right now we're still kind of exploring that. I mean, like, my thought would be, is it like, I don't know, like, I was a lot more promiscuous than she was in my younger life. And I think it's just kind of a holdover of, like, there's part of me that still really likes the sense of that. And so, like, I think that it wouldn't be very often, once every couple months, you know, if that.
You should also talk to your doctor then. If, for your wife's peace of mind, you're going to wear a belt and suspenders and use condoms and get on prep. If you know that this is, you know, a party you're going to look forward to months in advance, that there's this event and some friends are going and you're going to go to, or, you know, there's this big swingers retreat coming up and you'd like to go to that. They have found that prep is effective if you ramp up to it. If you start taking it a couple of weeks before, you know, you're going to be at, you know, on the gay cruise or whatever, that it is effective in those kinds of circumstances. So if you know, like, far in advance, it's not that you need to protect yourself because you could have, you know, sex at any moment with somebody else, and for your wife's comfort, you need to be on prep constantly and always. But if this is, you know, once or twice a year, you go to a thing and you know you're going to go, then you could get a prescription, again, in consultation with your physician, where you start taking the prep a couple of weeks in advance of that event. So at that event, the prep is in full force and you are protected from HIV at that event, and then you can go off it when you get home. And then you'd only need to be on it a couple of times a year. But again, talk to your physician.
Okay. Okay. All right, cool.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you, Dan. That's awesome. Appreciate it.
Bye. As we've talked about on the show before, we should seek out what's right for us and not compromise on what's most important. Our relationships should add value to our lives and pleasure, especially in the bedroom. So why don't we think the same way about our sex toys? Dame Products is a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real humans and couples like you. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Dame Products vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, smart design principles, and lots of love, earning glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazine, and many more. Whether you're a couple looking for an extra boost where it matters, or on a journey of self-exploration, or both, you can do both of those things at once, we are sure Dame Products will earn a spot on your nightstand. And the best part? Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is literally guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for $10 off.
Hey, Dan. I'm a bi female in my late 20s living in California. I'm in an amazing open poly relationship with my girlfriend of 1.5 years. Our relationship is great. I even have a friendship with her wife and a 6-month-old baby. The only time things get sour is when, if I mention I have a date or want to see someone else. Our agreement is complete transparency. I'll ask her if she's okay with me to go out on a date or a hangout with a potential date so that she knows what's going on. Honestly, I would prefer to have a DADT agreement, mainly because of how she acts every time I try to date. I tried for a little while to not date or see other people because it always results in a fight or an argument. Her reasoning is that I, quote, date my friends, and that doesn't sit well with her. I think that's because that's not how she likes to date, and I do. I like to befriend someone before knowing if I'd want to take the next level with them or not. She also has a big fear of me leaving her for someone else. I've reassured her multiple times that I won't leave her and I just want to casually date and that I'm not seeking a secondary LTR. She is my primary and I am her secondary. And as she stated in the past, in her perfect world, she would date her and her wife and we would not date anybody else. But I've expressed multiple times that that's not what I want. I've wanted to call you so many times with this exact issue before, but I try to talk to her first and we try to work it out. But I'm running out of options. I love my relationship with my girlfriend, but I'm tired of always getting caught in this trap of giving her anxiety, making her feel nauseous when, or making me feel bad when I want to go see for someone else. For example, her saying things like, why are you going to his house after blank if you were already complaining about being tired? Ever since we started dating, I have not been sexual with anyone else aside from kissing on a date. But far down the road, I would like to be. But I can't even try to date without giving her massive anxiety, and I don't want to imagine trying to do anything beyond that. I don't want to be monogamous. I don't want to give up my raising relationship, but I can't keep going in circles over and over again. I need some help because I feel like I've tried almost everything. Please help, Dan.
When someone pushes you constantly into reassuring them that you would never break up with them, you know what you need to say every once in a while? I might break up with you. You might break up with me. You don't want to feel like you've doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on these reassurances that I would never possibly leave you. I'll never leave you. Often when people are insecure about their relationships, they demand this from their partner. And their partners give it to them over and over and over again. And then when the time comes that you really need to end the relationship, you hesitate because you don't want to be a liar. You don't want to feel self-conscious about all those times you reassured your partner at their insistence to keep the peace that you would never leave them and never break up with them. You can say to someone, I don't think I would break, I don't want to break up with you. I hope we never break up. But it is a bad idea, generally, to reassure someone that you would never leave them because you might then hesitate to leave them when you need to. You don't need help. You need to push. You need to push to do what I think you know you need to do, which is end this fucking relationship. You are not out of options. You can break up and you should break up with your girlfriend of 1 year because you don't want what she wants and she doesn't want what you want, which means even if you have a great sexual connection, relationship-wise, you two are incompatible. She has told you that what she wants, and she is going to pressure and guilt you into giving it to her, is an exclusive relationship, just you and her wife, a closed triad. You are not interested in that relationship model. You don't want to be monogamous. Over the last year, you have been monogamous. She has successfully manipulated you through the drama and tears and guilt trips and anxiety and pressure into the monogamous relationship that you say that you don't want to be in. You have one card to play here, which is leaving. Saying, I'm sorry. I love you. We had a great time. It was a great connection. The year I spent with you, I learned a lot about myself, but it's over. And one of the things you learned about yourself with this woman is not to put up with this kind of shit. In the future, make it clear to anyone else that you date, you're not monogamous. You're polyamorous. And you're demisexual, which means that the other people you have sex with, you have to get to know them first. And you're going to have relationships with other people. And if they're not interested in that, then they're not interested in you, and you shouldn't be interested in them. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. Trash Love 3 tweets, love the caller on the Savage Lovecast this week, who is like, what is the unfathomable secret of clean anal sex? Word to the wise, anal douche bulb, lukewarm water, and shaking your ass to some tunes about 30 minutes before your partner comes over. K Carpenter 82 tweets at Fake Dan Savage, went to a farm tour today and there was a late 30s woman complaining about her boyfriend. She kept saying he wasn't keeping his commitment since they were only together for 6 months. Eye roll. I calmly walked up and recommended she start listening to the Savage Lovecast. Thank you, Katie, and welcome, new listener. And Georgie Wolf tweets, episode 672 regarding the couple considering a threesome. For the love of God, people, please don't have a three-way with someone to try and fix your relationship problems. Nobody wants to be used. If you want hands-on couples therapy, pay a sex worker. All right, if you want us to read one of your tweets on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now your response calls.
This is in response to the woman who felt like she had lost her sex drive after her mother-in-law had stayed with her for an extended period of time. And I just wanted to suggest that maybe she could just use some alone time. I personally have the ideal in-laws. They are fun and respectful and accepting, and I'm really, really grateful for my relationship with them. but whenever they come and stay with us for an extended period of time, I tend to find myself, even subconsciously, running out of energy just based on, you know, I want to impress them and make them feel like their son is in a safe, great space with me. And so it takes a lot of extra socializing energy out of me. So I tend to need a little bit of extra alone time after they leave, even from my husband. He and I both consider ourselves to be needy, but I have a hard time seeing to his needs immediately afterwards as well. So maybe it's not that you're skeezed out by him. Maybe it's just that anybody who has any kind of need from you is making you kind of push them away. So, you know, maybe just spend some time alone and then eventually, like Dan said, you know, get high and bone.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling to respond to the caller in episode number 673, whose father was recently diagnosed with cancer. I lost my dad a few years ago to cancer, and there isn't a day that goes by where I wish I couldn't just hang with him for like 5 more minutes. And I often think that I didn't do the right thing in spending as much time with him as I could have when I knew that he was sick. So, like, while I understand that the caller has major ideological issues with her father supporting Trump, I do too, I encourage her to realize that, like, Trump's not going to be in office in 2 years or 6 years. But cancer is really vicious, and her dad might not be here in 6 months, let alone 6 years. So I just wanted to call to encourage her to really, like, have a deep look and make sure that she's not going to regret not being able to be a part of his life. Not everybody wins their battle against cancer. So I hope that she considers it deeply, and I wish them all the best of luck.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the 25-year-old young woman who called and is dating the 44-year-old man. He has had 19 more years than you right now to do whatever he's wanted to do, make his own choices, live his life. She chose not to get married and have children. And now he is expecting you to make a different choice, to do what he wants you to do. You get to live your life. He's 44, had all of his choices, and now he has gone shopping for a younger woman who is fertile and ready to do what he wants. But that's his life. You live your life as you said. Nope, I'm not willing to give up my plans. Yeah, don't, honey. Don't. You live your life.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival Hump will be in Missoula, Montana on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets. And again, we're doing Savage Love Live in Chicago, Madison, and Minneapolis this week. Go to savagelovecast.com/events to get tickets to our live shows. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Mob Queens on Twitter at @MobQueensPod. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.